You're listening to the Naughty Rude Show podcast, Sin's place for all things sex, health, relationships, and identity.
So scandalous.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to the Naughty Rude Show on Sin 90.7, and I am Elsie.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Felicity.
And I'm Nicholas.
And Nick is here. He is our guest tonight on the Naughty Rude Show. Nick actually specialises in genetic... What was it again, Nick?
Taking a major in genetics at the moment as part of a double degree in science and journalism. I actually run a science show on Sin, which went out earlier today at 12 p.m. It's called Lab Rats, and it's... If you tune in next week at 12 p.m, you'll be able to hear it.
Or you can go to the podcast, guys.
Yep.
So Nick is joining us tonight mainly to talk about the evolution of the female orgasm, which, look, it's a topic we should all be
interested in, to be honest.
I brought a science paper with me to talk about.
Yes. So that's something to watch out for later in the show. First up, we are going to introduce ourselves. So I am Elsie. I'm 23 years old. I am in a long-term heterosexual relationship, and I think that's all we need to know.
I'm Jonathan. I'm 24. I'm single, so I am not in any heterosexual relationship. However, I am heterosexual. Sometimes, to my disappointment.
Oh, no. Poor Jonathan. I'm Felicity. I'm 21, and I'm bi, and I'm in a long-term relationship. Very exciting.
How long's that one been going on for now, Felicity?
About 2 years.
Fantastic.
Yeah, woohoo. Party.
Yeah, and I'm 22, currently in a homosexual relationship.
All right, well, welcome, Nick, again. First up, we're going to jump to a song, and then we will have some Tumblr questions coming up for you. So if you need to jump online or if you feel the want to, you can head to thenaughtyrudeshow.tumblr.com/ask, and I will just let you know that you don't need an account to send us in your questions. I will say as well, if you have any science-related questions to sex and relationships, definitely send them our way tonight, as we do have Nick in the studio with us. So, yeah, that's definitely something to think of as well.
We have a few questions already that we are looking forward to answering. So if you need to send in a question, you better send it in soon.
And we are going to jump straight into some questions now from all our lovely listeners. That would be you sitting there listening to us right now.
Hello.
The first one we have is, what is the best way to ask out a girl if you've never done it before? Any ideas, guys?
Well, as I've had a few dates in my time, and I find that the best way to ask out a girl is just to be like, hey, this is something interesting I want to go and see or do, would you be interested in joining me?
Definitely striking up common ground, I think, is a must in this kind of situation. You definitely need to, like, lay the foundation of, like, a mutual activity that you both want to do or maybe, like, a film that you're both really interested in seeing, perhaps.
Okay,
movies are always a really good idea if you're sorry.
Sorry about that. If you're... I am so rude. After all, it's a Naughty Rude Show. I was going to ask, so use me for example, like, I have... a lot of anxiety. So when a guy comes up to me, I'm just like, oh my God, can you just go away? What if you have me in that situation? Like, what do you do?
I think just being a friend, I think that's why it's like such a good idea to like have that mutual, like interest in each other and like.
So just be forward about it.
Well, not forward, but like not always going in with the intention of just wanting to talk to them so that you can go out. Talking to them to get to know them and to strike up a conversation that, like, you're interested in, they're interested in. And then, obviously, that's going to put you both at ease really quickly. So, that would be my suggestion.
I would also add to that, it's a really good idea to have an activity planned rather than just going, hey, so you want to do stuff?
Yeah.
That like, sounds so dodgy, John.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
Exactly. And as soon as you sound dodgy, it's like, ugh.
Yeah. Ooh, that's dodgy. I'm not going there. So if you have an activity like, oh, let's go ice skating or there's a really great hike I want to check out. Would you like to come and join me? Are you the hiking type? And that way, at least you start some conversation. Uh-huh. And you're like, okay, well, if it's not hiking, like, what sort of stuff do you like? Oh, that's something I'm interested in. Let's go paintballing. Or let's go to the movies. Or ice cream. Or drown our sorrows in the
pool. Try and lock it in, like, straight away as well, I would say. Like, pick a date and...
Yes, Netflix.
Pick a date and time. And lock it in
also
straight away.
Also, disregard embarrassment and just, like, approach it as just a simple, straightforward engagement. Like, it's really easy to try and overthink the reasons why a person might say no to you, but they could be for any number of reasons, and most of them are probably not going to be anything to do with you.
Yeah, for sure.
That's true. They might actually just be busy.
Does anyone have any really bad stories of when they've been rejected for asking someone out or rejected someone for asking them out?
God.
I have a bad story of somebody approaching me, and this was a guy in Hobart, and I was 18 at the time, and he was 23, and I hadn't been approached before, so I didn't know how to respond. I also didn't know quite whether or not I actually liked this guy. And it was a bit of an embarrassing back and forth where I was trying to work, because this was at a bar, right? And I was trying to work out whether or not I actually liked this guy. And I ended up making a bail for it, which was a bit embarrassing. But I was 18. I was learning. Sort of the takeaway lesson from that is if you're unsure, it's okay to just tell a person no off the bat.
Yeah, especially for this person asking the question, you need to, like, understand that obviously that person's going to be just as nervous as you are. So, something to keep in mind as well.
I understand it's, you know, the intimidation, because whenever I ask a girl out, I always get rejected.
Really?
And when I ask a guy out, they're like, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. So, yeah, it kind of makes sense to me. I don't know. But
is that maybe that they're not interested in women as well? Like, or
I've been to lesbian bars before.
Really?
And,
okay.
Oh, my gosh. The rejection is just brutal.
Look, I'm sure your options will be on the app from now on.
I'm in a relationship now, so it's not too bad.
Oh, okay. That's true as well.
It's not too bad. At least someone wants me, I think.
He definitely does. Okay.
Oh, I might want to add that sometimes asking them the first time may not necessarily work. It may have been just a situational thing. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try and at least be friends, because a lot of people who have been friends are able to, you know, foster that that friendship, and maybe we'll get into a relationship.
Well, my relationship now that I've been in for over 5 years, we started off as friends. So I think that was definitely the card that he played when we were in year 12, heading to the end of high school, definitely played the friendship card.
Yeah, yep. I always try and play the friendship card.
The long game, exactly.
Well, I like playing the friendship card. And, you know, when someone friend zones me, I own it. I'm like, yes, let's be friends. Let's go do things. And then they're like, hey, this John guy is actually pretty cool. Yeah. Now, it's given me some success, but it's not always successful. It's no doubt a method that will always work, but it does work sometimes. And when it does, it's pretty cool. And the other good thing is that then you can meet their attractive friends. And meeting attractive friends
is
really great.
That is
true, because then you have more friends you can make, and eventually you're just surrounded by lovely people.
All right, we are going to jump straight into our segment on the evolution of the female orgasm, which Nick is here to tell us all about.
Wait, I have a science paper on my phone. I have read it, but I need to remind myself of the names of the authors because they're unpronounceable otherwise. So this is published in the Journal of Experimental Zoology. The paper is titled The Evolutionary Origin of the Female Orgasm, authored by Michaela Pavlik, it's some Russian name, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce, and Günther Wagner.
The best name.
Yeah, Günther Wagner. First published on the 31st of July in 2016 and has had uh, five citations from other articles, which is a bit piss poor, but who cares? It's a funny article anyway. So what I love about this article is it starts off with some like really hilarious, but probably slightly inaccurate, and well, I don't know, whatever, but explanation on why the female orgasm has been so confusing for the greatest intellectuals of Western civilization. And when you and I mean, if you sit back and think about it, you can kind of see why, because people sort of like to think about things in terms of reproductive success. So basically, yeah. we're a species that reproduces itself, and to do that, we have sex.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward. And early scholars and intellectuals made the observation that in order to reproduce, males need to reach orgasm.
Right.
But women don't.
Yep.
So they're like, why can women reach orgasm? What is the function of this trait that they have? And this was way before evolutionary theory popped up. And even after evolutionary theory, it was sort of seemed to confuse the waters further. Because, you know, if you chalk up stuff to like, oh, God created everything, you say, well, God moves in mysterious ways.
But evolution
doesn't. Evolution moves in actually highly predictable ways. Mm. So the question kind of was exemplified. What is the evolutionary function of the female orgasm? Something that you need to understand about traits in evolutionary biology is that the positive traits are selected for, meaning that, you know, that they'll be passed on more often, and negative traits will be selected against. But traits that are neither of those things, that are just sort of there, can go either way, depending on, you know, just sort of random gene drift and so on. The paper proposes that earlier in primate evolution, because this is something that's sort of kind of unique to the primate line and some other mammalian lines, that the female orgasm had a function in reproduction that was lost, but that it still has a secondary function in humans and other primates.
See, I would automatically assume that it's like just so women want to have sex.
That is its secondary function, it's thought of. Yeah. So it's like its primary function. So what they think from examining other mammals, and there's a really weird description of how some scientists worked out that non-human animal females have orgasms by inducing them in female rabbits, cats, and ferrets. Don't ask me how they did that. I didn't want to find out.
Didn't look too far.
No, they had a citation. I didn't click on it. But that this can, in some species, actually induce ovulation. So if you think about humans and you think about the estrous cycle in women, that happens automatically, pretty much. You know, you don't have control over it. It happens once every month, regardless of environmental factors. This is actually quite unusual for a species. Most species have what's called induced ovulation. Humans have spontaneous ovulation, as in it just happens by itself. But induced ovulation means that it happens in response to an environmental factor. That factor can be the season. So some animals only ovulate during mating season, so usually early spring.
Mm.
Some animals have what's called partner-induced ovulation, which is when they're in the presence of a potential mating partner, then the pheromones can trigger ovulation.
Is that something like snakes? Snakes have that sort of thing?
I don't know about snakes.
Because I know that female snakes will actually
create. I do know that some
pheromones.
Wild species of cats, where like jaguars or whatever, where the females almost never have contact with the male except in rare like opportunities in their lives, just the pheromones of the male will be enough to sort of drive them into ovulation and, you know, make them sexually excited. But other species, and an example of this is like lions, cats, rabbits, and so on, have what's called stimulation-induced ovulation, which is where they actually ovulate by orgasming. And in these species, the clitoris is actually located inside the vaginal tract.
Oh, wouldn't that make life easier?
Yeah, it would make life easier.
I was just
gonna say that. What this paper noted actually is that in some species with spontaneous ovulation, the clitoris actually is a further distance from the vagina than what you would expect. And so, yeah, that leads to, as the paper described it, a much lower rate of sexual satisfaction for women in heterosexual encounters than homosexual encounters.
Super interesting.
I have evidence to counter that point, but to say it on air would be a content policy violation.
Right. Yeah, don't want to go there.
Is there a particular reason why, like, do we know the reason why humans have evolved in this said fashion? Because I imagine it would be because humans are very good at travelling to other places in the world, and that because we're, like, constant movers and hunters, it would make sense. And we aren't staying in one place. It would make sense that we wouldn't want a reproductive system that was bound by the environmental factors of our situation.
I mean, part of it would be to because we are a very close group species. So species that are stimulated primarily by any interaction with potential mating partners, those species are ones where males and females can sometimes be a little bit isolated. There's a species of donkey that's out in the middle of a desert somewhere. I forget the name, but basically the males fight over territory, and then it's just a crapshoot over whether females show up at all.
Wow.
Yeah. But humans are quite a closely knit species. We're an extremely social species, and so that kind of behavior just wouldn't make sense for us. As for the seasonal thing, we are located all across the globe, but there's evidence to show that this happened before humans started moving across the globe, back in our primate ancestry, because this same trait is found in other primates. As to the specific reason why, we don't know as of yet how evolved. Actually, the paper itself mentioned that the title of the paper was kind of misleading because they didn't discuss the evolutionary origin of the female orgasm.
Yep.
They discussed the origin of the human female orgasm.
Yeah.
So are you saying that back in those days, we are conditioned by the seasons in a way?
If you trace far back enough, you'll find a different mechanism for ovulation.
Okay,
but eventually we evolved into spontaneous ovulation, which is, you know, the estrous cycle that we're all familiar with, I'm sure. Mm.
I imagine it's actually quite beneficial because being in the presence of a partner for the human race would be a very, very worrying way of getting into ovulation. Like, imagine
Well, that'd be stupid because we're around each other all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, you and I have to deal with this anyway. No, we can't talk about that on air.
What?
Not that. I'm talking about, like, the male equivalent of being horny all the time when you don't want to be.
Oh, that's frustrating. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is very frustrating.
I guess, like, you know, cavemen times, all they ever do is sex, reproduction, and hunting. So
Not quite. We did have culture way back in the Stone Ages.
Oh, really?
Yes. Cave paintings.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention dances.
Also made ornaments out of rocks and
games.
Okay, so we're not that big.
Body paint.
Yeah.
Dances.
Yeah.
Stories.
Language.
I'm learning a lot today, guys.
Now you guys are just, like, naming cultural.
Well, I mean,
way to put Felicity in her place.
Sorry.
All right, guys. So we are actually going to be talking more about the female orgasm coming up in the rest of our show.
Are we?
We are. We have dedicated the whole show around you today, Nick. Okay, so coming up, we've got a segment on international sex myths, which is also related to the female orgasm. So that's something to look forward to. We will, of course, be jumping into some more Tumblr questions after the break and also be talking about the orgasm gap. Quotation marks, which present today in both the boys are just shaking their head at me, but no, guys, this is serious.
No, I agree it's serious.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated that it's a problem.
Yeah, for sure. And we are going to jump straight into some Tumblr questions, guys. Get excited.
Woo!
If you do have any questions you'd love us to answer for you tonight, you can send them into thenaughtyrudeshow.tumblr.com/ask. You don't need an account, so just head right on over there to Tumblr. Our first question for this little segment is, my foreskin is very tight and has trouble retracting. How far is it supposed to go back and how loose should it be? Guys, over to you.
Well, do you have anything that you want to say about this particular issue?
I've never had a problem with my foreskin. I would probably advise this person to consult their doctor.
That is good advice. Mm. I once had to consult a doctor about this, mainly because when I was hitting puberty, my genitals didn't grow exactly at the speed they were supposed to, like, together. So, like, for example, your foreskin can grow faster to some males than your penis will.
and the other way around. Mine was sort of the other way around, so my penis started growing before my skin had started being growing, which created making it really tight.
Tension,
pretty much
yeah.
very similar situation. Mm-hmm. You may be lucky. This situation might go away. Mm. You might be unlucky. You may need to get circumcised. This is exactly why you can go to a doctor. Circumcision, yeah. by the way, is totally, totally normal and been practiced for like hundreds and hundreds
thousands
of years.
Thousands of years.
But just yeah. doing it for the sake of it is not advisable.
And also, yeah, yeah, I mean, it is obviously a painful process as well. So, yeah, it's some people are circumcised, some people aren't.
That's true.
But with this particular person, so they obviously it could lead to something worse, as you were saying, or it is, especially if you are just hitting puberty or just going through the first few years of puberty, it might be something that's semi-normal as
exactly.
well.
Yeah. So if you're between the ages of 11 and 14, this is a fairly normal thing to happen. Not many people talk about it, obviously, because it's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you hit, say, 18 and you can't peel your foreskin back all the way to reveal that, I suppose, the head of the penis, mm-hmm. Like the sort of the back rim part, then you probably need to get that looked at. And the reason why I say that is I'm going to go a little bit into the history of circumcision.
Yeah, go for it.
Basically, one of the main reasons people think circumcision was an important issue was because when humans went into deserts or sandy areas, dust would get stuck there.
Oh, wow.
And when dust got stuck there, it got infected.
Yeah, okay, so they chopped it off behind the rim so that it was obviously able to come out. Okay.
Exactly, right. So there was no ability for it to get infected because things wouldn't get stuck there or would be much less likely.
You'd be able to wash it out more easily.
Yeah, exactly. But the benefit of having a foreskin is not only does it increase stimulation and pleasure, but it also... Like, within the foreskin, there are, I think it's good bacteria or enzymes or something. I'm not specifically sure. You probably have a better understanding than I do.
I actually don't.
Oh, well, there you go. Your body produces, protective chemicals or bacteria or something.
And it's also a cleaning mechanism as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it flushes everything out. Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why it stinks a little bit is because, like any sort of bacteria that you might find in any part of your body, it smells. But that's actually helping it stay sanitary. And how loose it should be, really, it should be loose enough so that it closes on its own. When it's soft, it should have some sort of at least closure because that's the seal that prevents things getting in.
So you're saying it needs to overlap a little
bit? That's only for uncircumcised penises.
Yes, yes. Okay. Obviously circumcised, they've cut that off. Yeah. Exactly. But how loose it should be is a loose term. It's a loose term because, you know, everyone's body's different. And I'm also going to say I'm definitely not a doctor. So don't judge yourself based upon this.
And if it's hurting at all, definitely head straight to your GP.
Yeah.
Okay, we are going to jump onto the next one. I'm 17 and female, bisexual. I would really love to try a threesome with my boyfriend and a female friend of mine, but I don't know how to bring it up with him. Is there any easy way around this?
This is my world.
Take it away, Felicity.
Okay, threesome, eh?
Has anyone here tried a threesome, by the way?
Not a threesome, but I've tried a foursome.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
High fives.
I have actually had a threesome and a foursome as well. Sorry, Dean. well, honestly, just again, we talk about honesty, and it's literally the answer to your question. Honesty is the biggest thing. Be open about it. Be open-minded. I mean, what you could do is do your research. See where your boyfriend stands with the situation. You need to respect his wishes as well, even though you're bisexual. At the moment, I am bi. Well, I have always been bi, but at the moment, I'm with my partner. And, even though he likes to entertain the idea of a threesome, likely we wouldn't do it because it's just going to complicate things and you never know what's going to happen, especially that I am bi. I like to refer myself as a very sexually open person. So who knows what's going to happen? That being said, honesty, best policy. See or listen to your partner, see what he thinks, and just go on from there, I suppose.
It's worth asking anyway, even if your partner does say no. That happened to me a while ago where I was with a previous partner and I asked if they were into threesomes or whatever, and they just said no. I said, okay, so we just didn't talk about it again.
Okay. Yeah, a really good way to bring this kind of topic up is just talking about fantasies in general, I think, or like sexual experiences that you want to do together or that maybe you are both interested in or maybe individually interested in as well. Just opening up that communication is really important.
I was going to say, opening up to the fantasy is a great idea. Yeah. One thing you shouldn't do is go, so, do you find this person attractive?
Oh, my God.
Because that will make them go, oh, my gosh, what are you trying to say to me? Are you trying to call me unfaithful? You don't want to get into any of that murky stuff.
See, with threesomes, foursomes, whatever sims, you need to be very trustworthy and you need to trust your partner that, you know, after the whole deed is done, things will get back to normal in a way. Because who knows, they might be, that third person in that relationship might be, helpful or, good for your sex life. And you kind of want to respect each other's wishes as well. Like, obviously, sex can be an emotional thing. And because you're bisexual, like me, sometimes that might get in the way of your relationship. Mm. So you need to be very, very, very open with your partner.
Yeah, you need to decide from the start if you want to go down the road of polyamory or if you, definitely just want to keep this as a sexual experience between the three of you.
I would also say talk one-on-one with the female that you want to bring in prior to you can do it after you've talked to your boyfriend about it, but definitely before they are here. For example, if you invite them over just to catch up and you're all hanging around in your lounge room,
can you imagine that?
Oh man, Friends is a great show, you know what was missing? Threesomes. Then they're probably all going to be like, whoa, this is totally not what I was expecting. Yeah. I'm not comfortable. I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
Give them a little bit of notice.
Friends more like friends with benefits.
This week, running with our theme of female orgasms, we are going to be talking about how back in Shakespearean days, people used to assume, or it was widely spread that for a woman to get pregnant, she actually had to orgasm. And in the process of orgasming, she would release, quote, a female seed.
I mean, if we were lions, they wouldn't be wrong.
Really? So that's something that's
in, that's partner-induced, what we were talking about earlier.
Oh, gotcha.
Like, you know how cats feline species, the males have raked penises?
Oh, my God, that's so not, a turn that, on that, the
that's,
image.
That's so when they pull it out, it gives them serious stimulation.
All right, I'm really cringing at that right now. So in Shakespearean days, the clitoris is viewed as a sort of inside-out wang. That's literally what it says here in the article. Just like the male equivalent, and it would release a female seed into the womb during orgasm as well as the male one. So I guess they weren't too far off apart from the idea that you needed to orgasm for it to happen. So, quite interesting, I thought. Yeah, and if apparently women didn't orgasm, but they still got pregnant, they used to blame it on demons.
Whoa.
It's always the demons.
Are we allowed to laugh at this?
Wow.
I think we can. It was back in, the Elizabethan
Logic.
Era. So.
Well, I'm not too fussed with that. That sounds people would have to put in effort.
Yeah, definitely feeds into, our topic next, which is all about orgasm gap. So, obviously, that wasn't as prevalent back then. If only we could dream.
Wait, does that mean that they would try and get a woman to orgasm before, or would have to be during, or we're just not
I think
sure?
It was during as well, so it was, a multitasking effort by the man. Also trying to orgasm as well as getting his partner to as well, yeah.
I will... They do say that a double orgasm is one of the most wonderful things you can have in sex.
Yep.
Where, both you and your partner do it at the same time. Exactly. If that was what the goal was back then, I'm say bring it back, man. Bring it back.
Bring back the dual orgasm. So any more thoughts on this, guys? I mean, it was actually in medical books back in the day, so... And also that blame it on the demon bit, that's
I wonder if people actually refer it Aretha back to it. Not so in depth, but like, you know what I mean?
Just touching back.
You know, with evolution and all that sort of stuff.
I wonder though, like,
Nick, if you just turn to me whenever you say evolution.
You are our gospel.
I was going to say though, it makes a. I find it sort of strange that you can be like, in those days, being in a marriage was quite religious. Mm. Your marriage was only really authentic if it was put together by a priest, and it was given favor by God. So when you have, if you didn't manage to get the woman to orgasm, it was a demon that impregnated her.
Mm.
That's really heavy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's very heavy. Like, yeah. Really different from like this whole thing as well is really different from, I think, stuff that came out later in England, which was like women didn't need to orgasm. It was all just about procreation pretty much. And I think the quote was like, women need to just lay back and think of England. Is that the...
Wow. Yeah. Think of England.
Like, that's literally a quote that they used to use.
God save the queen.
Yeah.
Oh, and a parallel universe.
The English were weird when it came to this topic. There was a time during the Victorian era where female horniness was seen as a mental health disorder.
I did not
believe this until I looked it up. They treated it by stimulating the clitoris to induce orgasm, because that would lead to a substantial decrease.
A release. Yes. And yeah.
Was it based on a hysteria?
When
understood
someone
how
told me was. That, I did not believe them, and I refused to for 20 minutes until they showed me the evidence for it, and I was like, why did they do this?
Well, I can think of plenty of reasons why they would have done it.
Oh, look, yeah. I'm sure the women didn't complain that much either.
Doctor, you need to treat me. What for?
Horniness.
Hey guys, here's a fun fact. Cleopatra, back in those days, they used to put bees in like a canister or something like that and use it as a vibrator. That would be the first vibrator.
Oh my god.
Bees inside a canister. Yeah.
That's insane.
Crazy.
Yeah. That's so ingenious as well.
It's smart, but very,
Well, how would the bees feel?
They wouldn't know what's what, would they?
This must be where the birds and the bees came from.
Yes.
Birds was a slang term for ladies back then.
Really? Oh, yeah.
What's hey, bird. How hey you bird. Doing?
Oh, my God.
I was actually looking up, speaking of old terms for things.
Yeah.
When I was studying Much Ado About Nothing, I was running over, there's this phrase that... Beatrice says, and she's like, the important thing about a good man is being having a good reputation, being reliable, and having a good foot. I didn't get what they meant by good foot. And apparently, good foot was a slang term for penis.
Oh.
So it was quite raunchy.
Yeah.
And there's a few other names that we've got here. Whispering eye is apparently the name for a lady's genitals.
I think I've actually heard that one before. Yeah.
Whispering
sure.
eye.
Whispering eye. That's really.
I'm just trying to break apart why it's called that.
I think whoever called it whispering probably wasn't very good in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the fact that they called it an eye. Like, geez. Now I just feel like I'm being stalked.
Watch, yeah.
Like,
the clit is watching the penis right there.
All right, we're getting way too weird here.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing actually weird about genitals. We are just very strange the way that we talk about them.
So if you would like to write into us at thenaughtyrudeshow.tumblr.com/ask, please do. And you don't need an account to ask us a question on Tumblr. We are jumping straight into some Tumblr questions, guys. And first off, we have, what misconceptions do you have about sex through watching porn? And what was the difference when you first started having sex?
I have one specific to homosexual male relationships.
Go for it.
It's not as easy as porn makes it look, basically.
Right. So
you need to build up to it, right? Because if I can get specific for a moment, the anal cavity is not really adapted to have things put in it. So you kind of need to stretch it out a bit first.
Yeah, not generally what it was made for, but
yeah, it's not what it was made for. It does feel good. I can attest to that. But you don't want to start putting things that are penis-sized in it straight away. Yeah, you want to start small and build up.
Yeah. Can I ask, what are your best tips?
Start with your little finger in the shower. And I say in the shower so you can wash it off immediately.
Makes sense.
With soap, preferably. And then just gradually move up as it feels good. Also, it's not for everyone. Like, if you're interested in the idea and try it out and then find out that you don't like it, that's fine. You know, nobody says you have to. And if they do say you have to, dump them.
Right. You know what? This whole discussion just came up with there's a saying, cleanliness is next to godliness, and you can totally put this into an entirely new thing because, like, orgasms feel pretty good and, like, it's almost heavenly. And therefore, cleanliness is next to godliness. Be clean when you try it.
Yes.
Anyway, I just
thought that on like a soap packet or something at some point.
It's technically an Indian proverb, but, you know. It's not supposed to be sexually related at all.
No, but we're taking it there tonight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I make fun of people who attest orgasms to, like, higher spiritual experiences.
Really?
Yes. I did it several times when I was making fun of the book Birdsong. Have you read Birdsong? There's a sex scene in it that's absolutely hilarious.
No, I haven't read it, but now I'm very much intrigued.
It's meant to be serious, but it's really not.
Well, I know that...
The rest of the book is great, but that particular bit had me laughing on the bus home.
It was a common ancient Japanese thought that the highest spirituality, spiritual thing you could achieve was actually a dual orgasm after meditation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, with that in mind, like... I heard something about having an orgasm when giving birth.
What?
Yeah, I've read it.
What, it like
helps
the process?
Yeah, like, you know, when you're trying to push the baby out or whatever, you know, sometimes when you feel an orgasm, it's actually a lot more spiritual. Like, you feel like you're connected to your body.
Okay.
Like, I don't know the scientific reason behind it, but, you know, that sounds about right because it's such a huge baby going through. It will hurt, but, like, you know, if you change your mindset, you know, it might... pleasurable.
I would be very, very surprised at the amount at which people have to stretch in order to put a baby out that there would be much pleasure at all.
I know,
because
but this is a documentary watched, I think, a couple of years ago and stuck with me. And now that you mention it, I was like, oh.
Well,
I mean, I am doubtful, so I'd need to see some evidence.
Yeah.
Let's all just take a moment as well and, like, thank our mothers for pushing us out of their wombs.
That's true.
Or cutting us out of their wombs.
Yes, but... one of the two. Mm.
I was just going to say, I wonder how you would go and measure and get evidence for something like that. Would you talk to people? Or
anecdotal?
No, actually, you can, if you can produce the scenario...
So you basically talk to pregnant women.
If you can produce the scenario, there are ways of measuring brainwaves, endocrine levels, hormone levels, and so on to approximate what a person's...
euphoria.
Yeah, to approximate, you know, the intensity of a person's euphoria or feeling or whatever. And there are actually brain patterns that are associated with specific sensations. So, for example, there's a very specific part of the brain that's associated with the sensation of pain. Mm. And you can usually just tell whether or not a person's in pleasure depending on how many endorphins their brain is releasing. Endorphin is basically happiness hormone. As if you have a sudden rush of happiness, that's your brain releasing endorphins.
Nice.
Or in that situation, just look at someone's face, and if they look happy, they're orgasming, and if they look like in pain, maybe they're not.
I've been in enough relationships to know that the face is not necessarily as reliable as you think it is.
No. Some people have weird orgasm
faces. Wrong, I suppose.
That's not what I meant, but...
But I have a float to boat.
my housemate, he just looks deadpan when he's happy. You'll be like... The difference is he just has a little bit of a spring in his step if he's feeling happy.
So if you see him bringing around amazing imagery.
Yeah, yep. If he's just like bouncing along, oh, Aiden's feeling good. And he's like, if he's just dragging his feet, he looks exactly the same. You're like, oh no, Aiden, here's a hug.
So going back to our question, what misconceptions did you have about sex through watching porn? Anyone? Any misconceptions around? What you might have seen in porn and then realised it wasn't quite right when you started having sex.
I think the aggressiveness.
The aggressiveness, yeah.
Also how comfortable and relaxed you would be when you started it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because like, your very first time, you're like, whoa, what even is this? How do I do it? And you feel very like,
I don't know what I'm doing. And that, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean,
and
often than not, your first experience, the worst experience, I think.
Yeah.
Sex is not something you are good at. It's something you get good at.
Yeah.
That's true.
Sure. It's definitely a skill. Definitely a skill.
Mm. And it does need to be practiced. Though, I would say that what I found very different is the how willing people are to do things. Now, I'm not necessarily, you know, super exploratory when it comes to my sex a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. I'm not someone who pushes people to do things, and a lot of the time I don't ask for very much.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of do stuff and, you know, ask people if they would like it. So that's sort of my thing. And I found that sometimes people just aren't comfortable like they are in sex. In porn, everyone is comfortable. Everyone's pretty much always down for something, because if they're not down for it, they don't show it.
What's the point in you watching porn and one person's like, hey, do you want to do something? No, credits.
not today, actually.
Realistic porn. Oh, man.
It should be a genre.
Would you like to try stuff with crane? No, I don't want to get dirty. Please, just go back to reading a book or something.
It's probably already a series of YouTube skits.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
But, like, that's totally okay. And I think the thing that frustrates me a lot of the time in porn is how little the actors seem to actually be thinking about the emotional well-being of their partner. Mm. And that's something that's really, really important and isn't represented very much at all in porn. And even if they have a storyline, there is abusive stuff that's underlying all of it. So you really, really need to be in touch with how your partner is feeling and what they are comfortable with. Because you could be like trying something new and all of a sudden it goes completely wrong and you wouldn't even know why it went wrong. It might have triggered something bad in their memories. Yeah. Like, say one of my partners wanted me to try like grabbing them and holding them down.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that for about maybe 5 seconds and like, nope, sorry. Reminds me of when I got bullied at school. That was...
So you never really...
That you
even,
or her?
Even though that was...
She asked me and I did it and then she was no.
Oh, she was like,
yeah,
no. Okay.
So you never know what is going to be triggered with somebody. And if you do need to call... the kids helpline at all, it is 1-800-55-1800. What a nifty little number, actually. That's brilliant. And of course there is Lifeline as well, 13 11 14. We're gonna jump into one last question before a song. Can sex be between strictly friends? What if things get complicated? How can we make it work? Because the person that they're thinking of course, is a great friend and I'd hate to risk that friendship. So friends with benefits, guys. What are the thoughts?
Oh, man. Even asking out a friend who you're, like, interested in is, scary as all hell sometimes. Mm. I know I tried recently and I got a polite, I don't think I have time, but I think you're kind of cool, which is a very annoying answer.
Yeah, because that is annoying.
On one hand, you're like, oh, I think you're cool, woo. And on the other hand, you're like, but you don't have time. Ugh. Now what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to manage my feelings? Oh, the feels.
It's very awkward being direct with people, especially friends, because there's stakes there.
Yeah.
Often, if you're approaching a stranger.
Yeah,
if you're approaching a stranger, it's much easier because there's no lasting consequences if they say no. That being said, in my experience, the best relationships I've had have been with people who have already been friends for a while, and we can still maintain our friendships after the relationship is over, regardless of how long it lasts. It pays to be as clear as you can be with your partner in these circumstances, and to also try and assess whether or not this person would still be happy being your friend, knowing that you have those feelings for them.
Yeah.
Mm.
That can be a little bit difficult to assess and come to a judgment for.
Yeah.
I said earlier that if the only risk you have is embarrassment, then you should just go for it because embarrassment is temporary. But with friends, it's a little bit more awkward because the embarrassment can be a lot more permanent.
And also, like, if you do want to stay friends with them, there's, like, that whole juggling, that aspect of it as well. But, like, what do you think of friends with benefits? Like, literally just being friends with somebody and not having that, like, deep emotional connection and then being...
I think it depends on a person.
Yeah.
I had a friends with benefits once, and it was really, really good, actually.
Did you eventually get emotionally attached, though?
I did, and they went, no, and then I was like, oh. But the other thing is, we both knew it wasn't something that could have turned into anything anyway, because there were factors, other factors in our lives that would have prevented a relationship from working at all. So... it was very clear that it was never going to go there. And because of that, it actually made it simpler and easier to do it. And to be frank, when you are friends with benefits, it's a good situation because asking things like, hey, you know, we should probably go get tested before we do this. Trying out new stuff isn't as bad because your relationship isn't necessarily on the line. It can be a really great exploratory experience. So if you do manage to get it, it's really good. And the best thing about being friends is that you can be really frank.
Yeah, that's true.
You can be like, oh, nah, sorry, I'm just actually not really in the mood. And there's no... And you're like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I'll just go deal with myself. And it's not a big thing. Well, if you're in a relationship, you're like, oh, well, well, okay, yeah. If I say no...
You feel a little bit more obligated to the person.
Yeah, and disappointed because you know that it's not your responsibility so much, but, you know, they feel that way to you and you want them to feel that way to you. I know what you mean.
It's a hard thing to put into words. You're still, like, your own whole person when it's, like, just fuck buddies or, like, friends with benefits.
I will also say that emotions are biochemistry and that you can't predict what's going to happen in your brain, especially because that endorphin rush can... the endorphin rush that you would get from sexual intercourse with a person can make you more enamored with them. So, like, I'm the type of person who would... I'm just a really affectionate. I probably couldn't do friends with benefits just because I'd become too attached to the person afterwards.
I feel exactly the same. I don't think I could ever do it. I, like, after the first few times, I would just be like, oh, so can we stay and have dinner now?
I'm a very affectionate, sort of loving guy, but I was able to do it in that instance. And you can still have a sexual relationship without necessarily having romantic love. For someone, you can still have platonic love. You're a really good friend of mine. But you don't necessarily have romantic, and that's if you can appreciate that situation and grasp that, it can be a really wonderful thing.
But except then the endorphins come in, and you're like, oh no, now I'm attached.
Well, you know, sometimes you get endorphins playing sport with friends. Sometimes you get endorphins.
So it's just a different kind of sport.
Sometimes you get endorphins eating McDonald's and suddenly you're fat.
That's true. It takes two to tango. Yeah. It takes two to tango. And if you have fun tangoing, why stop the music?
I think I've been in that situation before, but in a very sad case whereby a friendship just ended. Thanks. I think what happened is that we were discussing a friends with benefits thing, and when we were about to do it, he just buggered off. So I think it depends on the person. Yeah. Like, some people, they're really into that idea, but when it comes to actually doing it, you never know. Like, you know, he was saying about endorphins. Maybe he was just...
Yeah, the opposite of endorphins. He had sadness hormones. Just fill his brain. He's like, oh, no.
Waves of it.
I can't.
I would also say, just for this person as well, definitely don't do it with, like, one of your best friends because you don't want to jeopardize that at all.
The best sort of person is someone that you know well enough that you can be comfortable around. But there's still room to discover more.
For sure. So you are listening to Elsie, John, Felicity, and we also have Nick in the studio as well tonight, who is our pretty much science guru for the evening. We are now going to be talking about orgasm gap in heterosexual guy and girl sex. So I just want to, yeah, obviously preface this topic by saying we are just talking about girl and guy sex. Obviously, there's lots of different variations of sex, but that's what we're going to be talking about in this instance. So orgasm gap, as it's referred to, we'll just say that for majority of women, if you haven't started having sex yet, in today's day and age, it is quite rare for women to not have to work for an orgasm, or for their partner not to have to work for an orgasm during sex. And that majority of the time, women don't have sex every time that they do have sex. So
you mean have an orgasm every time they have sex?
They don't have sex every time they have sex.
No, they don't. No, not every time.
Sometimes they think they're having sex, but really they're just eating breakfast.
But really they're not.
Oh, yeah.
So an Australian study of health and relationships came out in 2013 saying that 92% of men said that they came the last time that they had sex, compared to only 66% of women. Such a massive gap there. Oh. Yeah. Yep. And a similar study was done by Cosmo last year saying that 57% of women reported that they regularly experience an orgasm during sex. So that's only 57% compared with 95% of males who do. Yeah.
Guys, for the guys that are out there who are heterosexual and do have sex with women, step up your game.
Yeah.
Step up your game. Learn your partners. Learn what makes them tick. And then do it with your parts.
Well, I think that's what the big problem is here, is that... Thumbs up all round for that last bit. Yeah, the big problem here is that I feel like both men and women don't really know, like, the key to the female orgasm. I'm sure, like, a lot of women do, but, yeah, like, there are women out there
that just don't know what the key is. Bloody women!
Well, half the time they don't know, because it's a very, very difficult sort of Rubik's Cubey thing a lot of the time, and that what they...
It's definitely not a Rubik's Cube, just by the way.
Look, if
it's more like a space station operating panel.
See, okay. The way I see it is, you know, as a woman, you need to learn your own body and how it works before someone else can help your orgasm.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, get a vibrator, use your hand, you know, it's free.
I just used the Rubik's Cube analogy because the difference in complexity here is if you were to take a game of tic-tac-toe and look at how it works... That is the simplicity of the male orgasm. The only reason why it doesn't work is because someone stuffed it up.
Yeah.
While
every single game of tic-tac-toe ends in a tie unless someone's an idiot.
Exactly, right? This is exactly the same thing with the male orgasm.
I don't know why I'm finding this so funny.
This is brilliant. I love how we're using games as metaphors as well.
In my spare time, I design games, so I'm very good at talking about them.
Sex is a game of
Thrones,
guys. No,
the Rubik's Cube is a really good analogy because there's an interesting mathematical phenomenon called God's number, which is 21. That is the maximum number of moves that you can use to solve any arrangement on a Rubik's Cube. So experts in Rubik's Cubes take 21 moves or less to solve any combination. There are experts in female orgasm who could probably induce it in 21 seconds or less.
No. 21
seconds? What am I talking about? I'm sorry. I'm trying to be funny and I'm probably just
21 seconds would be like a world record, I think.
Well, whatever. I was just going to say that
then there are people who take forever and other people who just can't do it.
Yeah, well, the whole reason why I brought this up is there's layers of complexity in a Rubik's Cube, and there are layers of complexity within female orgasm. There's a mental component. There are several different physical components, whilst men sort of have all the components built into one easy place, and you sort of just go for it. And as long as they're very easy to turn on mentally. Like, why is
it's it too easy to turn on mentally?
I know.
It's hard to turn off mentally.
That you just need more practice, man.
I remember saying this thing to my partner. You know, the male penis is like a soda dispenser because everything just comes out of it.
Oh, man.
So it's true, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is far easier than the female genital anatomy, for sure.
So I feel like we have two wonderful females in the room. Give us, enlighten us on how we can do better, please.
Teach us good things.
Teach us good things.
Felicity?
Oh my god, why is that looking at me right now?
It's definitely something that needs to be talked about more. Okay, so like literally if you don't know where the clitoris is, you have, if you're looking at the outside of the female vagina, about, I don't know, I mean it's different for every woman, but maybe about like two fingers down from the opening of the female vagina, there will be the clitoris, which sits in between the two lips. So that is where it is located for anyone wondering. That is a very sensitive area on a female, so you definitely don't want to go in there all guns blazing and just, Felicity's doing some very vigorous actions with her hands
very
in the studio
vigorous.
At the moment, so don't go and do that for sure.
Don't be like Felicity.
I'm just thinking about that mouse right there, like the middle scroll of.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
You definitely want to use some lube if you're just getting into it, and also just like go in really gently. It can be like such a magical point of the female anatomy, but you want to go in with some caution.
Hey, it's also actually the homologous structure to the penis.
Tell me what homologous means.
Homologous. Okay, this so this is a word that turns up in biology a lot. It just means it's like an analog, but it's the same. Homo, the same analog. The same analog. So basically, there's a sort of a special organ, I forget the name of, that on embryos, which before like the embryo starts developing its, you know, sex specific organs. Can either turn into the penis or the clitoris. And, that basically means that...
Because we all start out as female, don't we?
Slightly misleading. We start out as neither male or female and then just develop into either way. But, I mean, the physical structure is closer to what ends up being female. Yep. And there's more effort put in to differentiate the male in the embryonic process. I'm not a person who's studied a lot of embryology, but I had a girlfriend who did.
Yep, so this this is the overview of it right here, right now.
I'm more of a genetics person.
Actually, this is an interesting topic because there's a town in, I can't remember which African country, but there's basically a village which is renowned for having girls that look, they look like girls when they're born. And it's only at a certain point that their penis actually starts growing and developing.
What? Yes,
and
I've seen that documentary too.
They get to age 12 and they're, or 11 or 12, and their genitals start growing.
So it's
and
like the development that's happening in the womb is like happening at like puberty age.
Super delayed. Oh, and it's like 1 in 10 in this, it would be more than 1 in 10. But yeah, so they're quite common.
Oh, that's crazy.
And so they have this... haircut on your birthday where you decide your gender based upon how you're developing. And so there'll be basically young girls that have grown up their whole life as girls that go, no, actually, I'm a boy and I know it now.
Yeah.
And then they get their haircut and then they take them out and they buy new clothes for them. And then from there on, they have a boy version of their name.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's super interesting, especially in, like, the whole, conversation at the moment around, like, transitioning as, like, a teenager as well.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, that's something that they don't necessarily get to choose, but, it's definitely
that specific phenomenon is not
topical.
Something we've heard of in developed Western countries, though. Yeah. It's specific to...
Yeah, of course. I'm talking more about, like, obviously choosing to be a different sex as opposed to, like...
I've got a bit of a philosophical question for you regarding transgenderism, because there is a bit of an issue around... the genetics of a transgender person. What you can't change about yourself is the DNA that you have. Mm. And there is such a thing as, you know, male chromosome, the Y chromosome in humans, or double X, which codes for female. You can't change that regardless of whether or not you can change your physical characteristics. What do you think?
What do I think in terms of, like, if you can change it or not? Or
Just what does it mean in general?
I would say, like, from my perspective, it doesn't matter what chromosome you have. It's all down to how you feel in terms of, like, how you're developing and who you're attracted to and how you feel as a person when it comes to sexuality or gender. Gender is something that, like, is... in my opinion, is not related. Well, not in my opinion, it is a fact, is not related to the gender that you're assigned at birth.
It is to a certain degree, but like that men and women do have different behavioural tendencies.
Yeah.
But I suppose the way I describe it, and I might get, there might be people out there who disagree with me on this, and that's perfectly fine. In biology, specifically in genetics, we have differentiate between genotypes and phenotypes. So a genotype is the genes that you have, a phenotype is the characteristics that they describe. And the example that was given to me when I was studying this for the first time was, imagine if you come across a person, they only have one arm. You wouldn't automatically assume that their genes only code for one arm. They could have lost that arm over the course of their lives. So phenotypically, they have one arm. Genetically, they could code for two arms.
Yeah.
So you could say that a person is phenotypically a female if they've transitioned, and is genotypically a male because that's their DNA. And I would say that that's probably the most honest way that you could phrase
it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Definitely. I think that makes sense as well.
Yeah, there's always you always have to be specific when you're talking clinical and when you're talking medical, because even if you've transitioned, you can be like, well, my body's built like this. Mm-hmm. This is what my body is at the moment in its current state, and it acts like this. Now, that is not typical necessarily of my brain or my personality. And so, therefore, I can this is the whole reason why they made gender fluidity, because you can have people who are totally the opposite gender in their heads and thus entirely lost within their own body. Mm. And that's just how they've been their whole life. Mm. And that is can be normal for some people. Mm. And it's not something that we should be afraid of either, just putting it out there. But I suppose what was the thing
where
I wanted
was that
to say?
Train of thought going?
Yeah.
We were originally talking about the orgasm gap.
Yeah, like we went
the philosophy, the philosophy, right. At the end of result, at the end of your life, or the whole point of life, I suppose, is to live a life, this is the way I look at it, is to live a life that is fulfilling for you. Fulfilling for you. So if you find that you want to live your life as going, look, I am this particular gender, that is a totally philosophically okay thing to do. And if that's what makes you feel, satisfied with your life, that's what you should do. Mm. But that, like, gender is one of those things that we have defined as humans,
as
because
society.
It makes sense, much like time.
The way I see it is that there's no purpose to life because we're all just a big chemical reaction. We're here temporarily, so just have fun, do what you want.
Wow, that is an interesting philosophy.
Would you consider it like a human right thing to choose?
I think down the track there would definitely be some development in gender, in that topic of, or area of gender, in terms of, like, maybe, I guess we're definitely going there in, like, bringing up children now, like, having gender-neutral toys and education and all of the above, that obviously sex education would need to be tailored to that individual. Yeah. But definitely moving towards, like, gender-neutral areas in children's development and also in, like, society in general is something that I think will come around in the next few years.
I don't think trying to eliminate gender from child development is necessarily a good thing. I think just as an anecdotal example, I, throughout my primary school years, was sort of brought up to not be especially competitive. Mm-hmm. And it was particularly frustrating for me because I found that I hated losing, even though I was trying to encourage, you know, to be okay with losing. But as I became more of an adult, I just sort of embraced my competitive side, which is described usually as a very masculine trait, to be competitive. And that's just an innate part of me, I think. And I think that probably has some, probably is a direct cause of my gender. So I think that, you know, you shouldn't actively try to discourage boys from being boys and girls from being girls. But, you know, if someone's, like, diverting from the beaten path, you know, there are ways to, you know, still encourage development without resorting to bullying tactics.
I think the important thing here is listening. If someone is going, hey, this isn't right, I'm, like, for example, if someone wasn't sleeping well, you wouldn't just go, well, you're just not trying hard enough to sleep. And if someone is trying to be the gender that they've been assigned at birth and they're failing,
you don't just go, well, you need to try being a boy or you're trying to be a girl better. It doesn't work like that. You should do what feels natural to you.
Yeah.
Also, you've only got one life. Don't make it a boring one. Experiment. Just make sure you're serious about a decision that you can't take back.
Yeah. All right. If this has brought up anything for you, the number for Lifeline is 13 11 14.
You're listening to the Naughty Rude Show with Jonathan,
Elsie,
Felicity,
and Nicholas.
Nick is joining us here tonight. He is our science guru. And tonight we are mainly talking about the female orgasm. So we're going to jump straight back into the orgasm gap, which is prevalent in heterosexual relationships, I guess. We were talking about it just before that song break, but I think what's really important to point out is that there's still prejudices that feed into this that are really still prevalent in the modern world. And I guess that's mainly to do with, I guess, male orgasm being essential for reproduction, but also, like, pressure to make him feel good, which I think women get a lot of. And also research, like there's a lot more research into sex-based disorders that are male, and pornography, of course, plays a massive part in this as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's still a gap that is there in society today, and it has a whole host of reasons. But, yeah, it's just something that's really important to point out, I think, that's... Yeah, it's something that's there and we need to address it and make it better. Bring those numbers closer together, I think.
Mm. I think that an important thing to think about or talk about in this instance is the attitude you have when you go into sex and how that can affect it. Like, when I go into sex, I have always been a giver. That's my thing.
That sounds like a line out of Mean Girls.
Look, for me, sex is an interesting challenge because I want to find it.
I find sex challenging.
Yeah, but it's like challenging, like a Sudoku is challenging. It's still enjoyable.
It's still enjoyable.
Whilst it is challenging.
Oh gosh!
Look, there is some intellectual element to it, and sometimes it's, you know, finding out where things feel nice. Sometimes it's finding out what intellectually gets them going. Because, like, the brain is a very sexual organ. It's like you need to make sure that they're in the right mood. And sometimes certain people will ask for certain things so that they get put in that mood. And other people will be like, no, you just do what you want and I'll respond in kind. And then you realize that nothing is working and you're like, what the hell? I was good at this the last few times I did it. What's wrong with
me?
And
I think that plays into it as well. I was going to bring up before that obviously females faking it is like a problem because guys then assume that what they're doing is correct. And like guys that do worry about this kind of stuff just go, fantastic. Like, I'm doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. Like, she's really enjoying this. Like, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Time
like I said earlier
again
in the show, you just don't tell us. And then you give us misinformation.
How are we supposed
There's nothing
to
that
know?
Scientists hate more than misinformation. Speaking of which, you know why scientists are great lovers?
Why?
Because they can experiment. But
I need a science joke of the night.
I've been bugging the content producer or whatever the title is to get a rim shot button.
A rim shot.
So every time I make a bad pun, I can press it.
Brilliant!
Oh,
brilliant!
Nice.
Brilliant!
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, as I said, the thing that a lot of people are learning about porn through sex through porn.
Porn through
about
sex?
Porn through sex. No. Learning about sex through porn. And the thing that porn doesn't do is tell you how your partner is feeling. It doesn't.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, they don't even acknowledge the fact that the partners have anything other than sex.
I mean, the big finale in porn is often the male finishing as well, as opposed to, like, the female finishing.
I know.
Yeah, which I think is a big problem.
I mean, like, porn is a consumer product. It's not an educational product.
Yeah.
If you're getting your sex ed from porn, don't.
And look, you're
good
all.
Tip.
I was going to say, you're always going to be a terrible lover if every time you walk into the bedroom, you're only thinking about how it's going to be good for you. If you're not thinking about how it's going to be good for your other person, you're going to suck at sex.
Yeah. I mean, sucking is good.
yeah, but you're going to suck at sex. I suppose if you find...
I'm gay.
Fair. Okay, cool. I'll use a different analogy. But anyway, my point has been made here.
So, Felicity, have you ever slept with a guy who finished and then just, like, stopped and walked out? Or not walked out, but, like, physically just...
Oh, I've been in a situation where I had a one-night stand and I just was just bloody hoping it finished, but that's about it, really.
Really? Yeah. I guess it kind of gets a little bit, like, that way as well. Like we were saying, if you're not, like, women's anatomy is a little bit more difficult than the male anatomy, so, like, if it's not there from the start, then you just kind of wait until it's over, I guess.
I think, like, this works for me. Like, if you're not feeling it with your guy, maybe just play with your own clit while you're, you know, having sex.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're doing the work yourself as well, you know what I mean?
A lot of guys don't care too much if that happens.
It's actually pretty hard. I've asked lots of guys, and they said that's pretty hard because you're actually doing the work for yourself, and you know they're seeing you orgasm to your own pleasure. So you know. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I have in my experience, I found that physically women can be incredibly different in the ways in which you can get them to orgasm. Like some people are like, oh, you know, up and down motions, or left and right motions, or like, no, I need pressure. And
obviously some women are going to be like a hell of a lot more easy than others, or like some women are going to be a lot more difficult than others. Like I personally have never had an issue with this, but I know that it's like really prevalent, and that unfortunately just sometimes women don't enjoy sex.
Hey, Elsie, here's a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in a G-spot?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Wow, that sounds like a very, that was a very confident yes.
There is a thing that I read. Oh my God, I keep reading stuff. Anyway, there are articles saying that G-spots don't exist.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just an imaginary thing. I don't know about that.
I would say like guys have G-spots as well, right?
Well, we definitely have spots where it feels very nice.
Yeah. we have the prostate gland.
Yeah,
the prostate gland. That's the one that I was talking about. Yeah.
Isn't the G-spot like the other form of the prostate gland, or am I getting this wrong?
I don't know, but all I know is that guys have a prostate gland, and if you massage it, it feels good.
That's true. Well, I was going to say that the prostate gland is an important sexual organ because it helps make the food for the spermies.
Is that why anal... Sorry, I'm so ignorant, but is that why anal can feel really good for the receiver?
It can feel good for a number of reasons, and getting into specifics is probably a content policy violation. But,
He's just waving his hands up and down.
We don't know what he's
looking
talking about.
Someone help.
He doesn't know how to articulate.
I don't know how to word this in a way that's not going to get me fired.
Right. I would just say sometimes I haven't specifically done it, but I've had someone else explain it to me like this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels nice in the same way a massage feels nice, and that there are... there's areas where it should touch the prostate, which then creates that sort of sexual release. So that is the basis of anal sex and how it works. That being said, I have no experience, so take my words with a grain of salt. So he said, she said sort of a thing.
I'd say that description was pretty accurate.
Woo! Go out there and explore for yourself, guys. Okay, we're actually going... I'm going to read out some feedback we've been getting in from all our lovely listeners this evening. My PB for getting a girl off is 35 seconds. Pretty chuffed. So whoever that was, applause to you.
Well done.
Claps for you.
Very much claps.
Slow claps.
I have a policy to try and make my partner come before I do, says another one of you, particularly during foreplay. That way, if things go wrong, no one's left leaves disappointed.
That is an awesome policy. That being said, though, if you don't have an orgasm
That's okay. No one should be disappointed by that.
No, that's actually something I wanted to point out. That should never, like, be the be-all and end-all. Like,
yeah.
You should enjoy the whole experience, not just, like, railroad for, like, one direct destination.
Yeah. It's not a game. There's no winning objective. Yep. It's just fun. That's why sex is playful. It's not, you know, a game.
In my experience, usually fail to orgasm disappoints the other person. Not the person who didn't have an orgasm.
Yeah.
That's true.
Because
the person who doesn't manage to achieve it feels like it's a failure for them because they weren't able to bring it out in you.
Yeah. Mm.
And they feel disappointed. I know that's the way I've felt at times.
And also, like, if you are finding that you are finding it difficult to make your partner have an orgasm, it's definitely, like, it's not you. It is just the situation or, like, possibly their mental state at the time and a whole other range of factors as well.
Sometimes it's also just getting used to a person.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I was going to say, when I first started having sex, I had a real issue with this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's purely because I didn't know that not having an orgasm sometimes is totally fine.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I had a girlfriend and we'd done it a few times and she just laughed after we had sex and it didn't work. And I was like, what are you laughing for? She's like, that was just so not what I was expecting. And it's just really funny. And I'm like, you're right, that is really funny. Oh, and I realized you could just
have fun with it.
Yeah, you can just have fun with it. And she's like, you know what, John, get a sock. We're going to do funny things with socks. And so then we made sock puppets. And and it was like the most ridiculous, silly thing ever.
Such a turn of events. That's
But like it was immediately,
but it's good,
it immediately turned off what it was an awkward situation into something where we were having fun. And that's what sex should be. It should be fun and it should be easy and carefree. And if things don't work, then things don't work and that's cool. Find another way of having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you and your partner can laugh during sex, stay with that person.
That's if it's manacle advice. Laughter, that might be a
different story. No, not that. Not that. Okay. There's a... Yeah.
That's the time you want to run for the hills, actually.
We are about to start a game because we don't have a whole heap of time left. But this game is quite simple. We are going to go round in a circle and we're going to try and come up with as many one-word analogies for genitals as possible.
One word.
Oh. It can only be one word.
So
play along at home, guys, and this next one does actually have a content.
Okay, so chocolate flour isn't on the table.
Okay, we'll make two words. Okay. Two words is the maximum you can have. Mm-hmm. And as soon as someone can't
made
do
up
it...
as well.
Yeah, as soon as someone can't do it within, like, say, 5 seconds, you lose. And we'll have to go, aw.
And content warning for this one as well, guys.
We may be saying some words that are swear words, but in their appropriate meaning. Oh, well, no, we're not saying them. So, no C word. So, I'm going to start. Disco stick.
Fun bags.
Fork.
Cock.
Melons.
Flour.
Aubergine.
Chocolate flour.
Coconuts.
Can't just add chocolate to the start of it.
You can always add chocolate.
It's referring to a different organ entirely.
Watermelons.
Peach.
Penis.
Clam.
Vagina?
Is that an analogy?
Oh, right, analogy.
I said penis.
Oh, right.
So you said
penis before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You didn't notice.
Damn it.
You're a bad ref.
Oh, John loses. Sad face.
I'm sure you guys could think of a hell of a lot more at home, but that is actually all we have time for tonight. I would love to say a massive thank you for Nick for coming in tonight, helping us out with that fun evolution of the female orgasm. If you didn't manage to catch it earlier on, this will be on a podcast later in the week. Thanks, guys, as well for having a good show tonight.
It was a pleasure having you, Nick.
It was a pleasure coming. And if you want more bad puns, tune into Lab Rats, 12 p.m. on Sunday.
Plug City!
Oh, that was great. Who loves a bit of cringe at the end of a day?
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, I have been Elsie, and I still am Elsie, and...
Wow, remarkable. Yeah, yep. You're still the same person.
Still
as you
the
were
same
a few
person,
minutes ago.
Even though I'm going to be leaving now. And tonight we had John, Felicity, and Nick in the studio. You can tune in to us again next week on The Naughty Rude Show at Sin 90.7. We hope you all have a really good night, and send us in all your questions as well for next week at thenaughtyrudeshow.tumblr/ask, and we will see you again next week.
You can listen to The Naughty Rude Show live from 8 to 10 on Sin 90.7 FM. So scandalous.